Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined for this playoff edition of the podcast by a pair of children. Number one, it's Raptors HQ's Mitch Robson. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
Glad to have you back on. And also joined by, from Grizzly Bear Blues, Welcome to Loud City, Hardwood Paroxysm, Ryerson University, it's Kevin Young. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. Glad to be on.
Yeah, glad to have you. A couple of housekeeping things before we get into the show today. Number one, you may have seen today, if you were following on Twitter, the announcement that next week, April 27th, a Wednesday, myself, Daniel Reynolds, our managing editor here at Raptors HQ, Blake Murphy of Raptors Republic, and Will Liu of The Score, all of whom have appeared on the podcast before, we're going to be doing a live podcast from Tall Boys at 838 Bloor Street West, part of the Hoop Talks Hangout Series. Space is pretty limited, so make sure you go to the page. We'll put a link in the post for you to click on and sign up. You got to register. It's a free event. There's $5 steam whistle. It's going to be fun. It's just going to be, you know, bloggers hanging out in a basement talking about basketball, where we belong. So so make sure to keep an eye out for links and stuff. We'll be promoting that all week. Next Wednesday, April 27th, I think it's at 7 o'clock, doors open. We'll be starting the show at 7:30. We'll be recording a live podcast, sort of a crossover episode, and we'll have a good time. There's a chance it is the day after. It's the day after Game 5 of the Raptors-Pacers series, so there's a chance that A, the series could be over, and it'll be a very celebratory mood, or B, the Raptors could have been lost. They could be out of the playoffs by then if things go horribly wrong in the next three games here. So there'll be reason to drink no matter what. So get ready for that. Also, HQ Overtime is our live post-game show hosted by John Godis. You can find that after every playoff game, where John is going to have a different guest on every show to talk about the game that just happened. It goes live for like 5 minutes after the game ends, so the wounds are usually nice and fresh, and it's a lot of fun. You can also find the archived episodes on our iTunes page and at RaptorsHQ.com as well. And so yeah, that's the stuff out of the way that we need to tell you. Today's show, Mitch, Kevin, and I are going to look back at games 1 and 2 of the Raptors-Pacers series and sort of that roller coaster of emotions. We're going to talk about DeMar DeRozan's struggles. We'll talk about Jonas Valanciunas being a boss. We're going to talk about the bench unit and how good it's been. We'll talk about Paul George, of course, and how he's destroyed the Raptors. A bunch of other stuff we're going to touch on Kyle Lowry versus Corey Joseph, which is apparently a thing that people are suggesting could like tear apart the Raptors core. I don't buy it, but we'll get to that. There's a DeMar DeRozan situation with how he's played this year, whether it's changed, whether you think he should be back next year. And then there's the whole Patrick Patterson and Corey Joseph getting absolutely no love for Sixth Man of the Year. We'll get into that as well. Some listener questions, an episode sponsor, all the stuff you've come to know and love from The Headquarters. We'll be back in just a few minutes to get things going here. Okay, welcome back to The Headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Mitch Robson and Kevin Young. Going to dive headfirst into games 1 and 2 of the Raptors and Pacers first round series. As you probably know, it's a 1-1 tie going back to Indiana. The Raptors dropped game 1, 100-90. It was pretty ugly, especially late when Paul George just destroyed the hearts, ripped the hearts out of Raptors fans across the country. It was tough. But game 2 was a lot better, and it was a nice response. DeMar DeRozan's struggles are still continuing, which I think is what we'll start with. We'll get to the fun stuff with Jonas Valanciunas being a monster and all that in a bit. But DeMar DeRozan so far, he shot 5 of 19 or 4 of 19 in the first game, and was a disaster. He said he wasn't going to shoot that again. He said he would he would shoot better. He did by a bit. He was 5 of 18 in the second game. For 10 points. First time all season he didn't get to the free throw line, which is crazy. It was just a rough night for DeMar all around. Mitch, we'll start with you. What is it about DeMar that you've seen that's why is he struggling so badly? Is it just a matter of Paul George being a ridiculously good defender, or is there something else going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably that matchup. Of course, George has the length advantage and all that on the defensive end, but it's just watching him these past two games, it's reminded me of that series against the Nets where he gets into the lane, and as soon as there's contact, he's not being strong with the ball like he has been this regular season, and he just sort of, he loses so many handles on it, and he's just not fighting through contact, and he's just forcing it.
Yeah, it's been tough, and you know, Indiana's sort of playing imperfectly, where they're just sort of sagging their bigs back. Miles Turner has blocked him 5 times already in the series. And like every time DeMar goes to the rim, he's meeting a jumble of bodies and arms, and he's not really getting calls. When I'm at the games, it's tough to see because I'm up in the press box. There's no replay. So it's tough to make a judgment on that. But you feel like there's probably a couple missed calls in there at some point. He did get to the line 6 times in the first game, which is fine. But the 0 times is a little concerning. Kevin, what about you? What have you seen from DeMar?
Yeah, I think that, a bit predictably, I guess, that that Paul George matchup is really not favorable to him at all. He's really, it's not really my place to say this most of the time, and I say this carefully, but it really does seem like George is almost in his head a bit. You know, he's almost tentative with his shot selection, not being as decisive as we're usually accustomed to seeing him. He's passing out a bit more. I'd really like to see Dwayne Casey put him in motion a little bit more, you know, give him better looks, get him curling around screens and setting him downhill and whatnot. But, he's very different from Lowry in that if he's not making shots, he's really not contributing much at all. So it is very concerning that he's not really being himself right now.
Yeah, it's tough because I think you're totally right. You can see how passive he is, and when he comes around a screen and it seems like he's sort of shaking George off the ball. George regains his position like immediately, and then DeMar looks really hesitant to just drive it down the lane like he normally does with the full head of steam that we're used to seeing him do it with.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep coming back to I totally agree with you there, Kevin, in terms of just trying to get him off the ball looks a little bit more. The thing with what they're doing is like a lot of, especially in game one, it was just like, hey, here, DeMar, go one-on-one with one of the best wing defenders in the league and just try to create. And you know what? That's not going to work very often against Paul George. He's, aside from Kawhi Leonard, maybe the best wing defender in the goddamn league. So I don't know why they were going to him so heavily in isolation and in post-up situations. It just didn't make any sense to me. I think what you have to do is try to run DeRozan around off the ball, slam George with a series of screens as often as you can. Hopefully that takes away some of the energy he's been using on the offensive end, and maybe just try to slow him down that way and get DeMar some open looks like that. And also, the whole rotation thing we'll get to as well. Game one, DeMar was out there, exclusively against George and just never got any breathing room from that. So that's another thing as well.
Yeah, and I think when he's getting, cooked defensively, like that stretch in game one where George scored 4 straight buckets on him, he's going to take that low point onto the offensive end and lose more confidence that way.
Mm-hmm. It's weird, too, because, all season long, DeMar has sort of overcome these challenging wings that used to give him all this trouble. I think Jimmy Butler is the main example where, he didn't really have much trouble against Butler at all this season after never really having any success against him before.
Yeah.
And I just keep coming back to, I think Paul George is just maybe the worst possible matchup for DeMar, maybe in the league. He's 6'9". He has the height advantage. He has the length advantage. DeMar can usually sort of bully guys with his post moves, and he just hasn't really been able to do that against George for understandable reasons. He just is totally physically overmatched. And I've liked to see, a couple times DeMar yesterday was up against, Monte Ellis or George Hill in the post, and you could see that he wanted to attack that mismatch, and it was nice to see that. But at the same time, when he did get those mismatches, he was just trying way too hard, and he was forcing things that weren't there. And it's something that I think, there's a reason he didn't play in the fourth quarter. He was just sort of a net negative for the entire team. He wasn't doing anything positive defensively. So I guess going forward, Mitch, is there a different way that you'd like to see Casey sort of allocate DeMar's minutes? Would you like to see him cut back a little bit? He only played 30 yesterday.
Yeah. I think it was a great move by Casey to actually sit him down. I didn't think he would follow through with that, but I was really happy to see that he kept him on during the fourth quarter when they went on that run 15-7 to start the quarter and then just kind of blow him away from there. But in terms of minutes, I don't really know what you're going to do, of course. You don't want to just completely match him to Paul George's minutes. I mean, they try to do that with Carroll, at least, so DeMar couldn't guard him exclusively. But I think if you keep him around the 30 to 32 mark, unless his shot is falling, that works. Maybe he can be more of a facilitator. And early in the game, he looked to pass, but then he fell back into that rhythm he had in game one of just chucking. So,
yeah, it feels like a lot of the time when he, like during the regular season, when he would drive into traffic and there wasn't anything at the rim for him to get, he would quickly decide to kick it out to somebody. And it feels like he's just feeling the pressure to get himself going.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to force like impossibly contested looks up and instead of looking to his teammates in the perimeter. I guess on the other side of this is Paul George. And I think, you know, people were really getting on DeMar, especially in game one and last night as well. And just totally getting on him for forcing things. But at the same time, you know, a lot of credit has to go to Paul George. He's been unbelievable in this series on both ends of the floor. I can't believe the amount of energy he's been able to keep up on both ends. And, you know, like I said, he's a really tough matchup for DeMar. In terms of offense, though, you know, Paul George, he's been really good. He was 10 of 13 in the second half of game one. He absolutely destroyed the Raptors. But if you look at his shot chart, a lot of the stuff he did in that half came from outside. And yesterday as well, he seemed pretty content to, you know, just heave stuff up from three or from the mid-range instead of driving, which is sort of his game. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, Kevin, we'll start with you. What do you think of the job the Raptors have done in terms of defending Paul George? Is it sort of a case of they've done everything they can, he's just getting, you know, he's just getting his, and they can't really ask to do anymore?
I think it's a bit of a balance. You know, the Raptors have certainly, they've thrown a bunch of different bodies at him. They've thrown DeRozan, of course, Damari, Norm. I think Damari starting game two was something that I wasn't really big on, just because, you know, Damari obviously hasn't looked 100%, and I thought Norman Powell did a really, really good job of defending George. And that's something I'd love to see more of, actually. I think Norman Powell should be maybe even a 30-minute-per-game guy in this series. He should be the primary defender on George, and based on game two, I feel like he's really going to put up that fight. He's really going to body him up, you know, play physical around screens, and that's something that I think could be a real, you know, a real, maybe their best option going forward.
Mitch?
Yeah, I agree with that for sure, Kevin. Like, yesterday, Norman Powell did a great job on denying George the ball in the post. So, of course, he had to try to run around screens and get it on the perimeter, where you got more of a chance to try to crowd the lane and stop him. So, I don't know if Dwayne will go back to Norman in the starting lineup for game three, but I'd really like to see that.
So, let's get into that, because the rotation after game one was kind of the big, other than the struggles of DeMar and Kyle, the rotation weirdness was sort of the big thing there. You know, there was a stretch at the end of the first quarter and into the second for about 5 minutes where the Raptors played with neither DeMar or Kyle on the floor, which like never happens this season. I tweeted this stat out during the game after I looked it up on NBA Wowie. And over the course of the entire regular season, that four-man bench combo of Ross, Patterson, Joseph, and Biombo had played only 79 minutes of the entire season without one of Kyle or DeMar on the floor. And 30 of those came in April when guys were resting. So that just doesn't happen very often. You don't really see that ever. But you had it for 5 minutes in a playoff game. It was so weird. And then other than that, there was the weird, you know, swapping Patterson in for Carroll instead of actually putting them together on the floor, which sort of, I think, would have been a nicer, you know, more switchy option, and a couple of guys on the floor that you could use to sort of interchange against Paul George. But instead it was just one or the other. There were a whole bunch of weird things going on. And like, you didn't really see the Lowry and the bench mob lineup very much. So I think Casey did a pretty good job yesterday in terms of what he adjusted. Obviously he started Carroll, that sort of got a wrench thrown in it when he picked up two quick fouls. And obviously when Terrence Ross got hurt and had to leave to go to the concussion protocol, that sort of threw a wrench in things as well. But you could see sort of the outline of just the regular, substitution patterns the Raptors had used in the regular season, aside from Luis Scola playing just 10 minutes instead of his usual 15 to 20, and Patrick Patterson playing 32, which was, you know, of everything that happened, was maybe my favorite thing that I saw.
Yeah.
But so, Kevin, we'll go back to you. Is there anything out of Casey that you think he still needs to tweak going into game three? Because, you know, he still went with a 10-man look. He may not have had Carroll not gotten into early foul trouble and had Ross not been hurt, so we don't really know. But, like, is there anything that you still think he needs to tweak and sort of tighten up a little bit?
Right. This is kind of going back to what I said earlier about Norm and Carroll. But I would trim Damari's minutes a bit, maybe take a cut out of Damari's even. And I would give those minutes to Norm. I'd play him 30 minutes a game, just because I think he's that great of a defender right now against George, or at least that he's worth a look, absolutely, right now. And also, of course, I would put Patterson in for Scola, maybe even bench Scola altogether, and maybe play Damari as my backup four primarily.
Yeah, so here's my idea, and it's, you know, maybe not totally feasible, but my idea is to go with a super small starting five of Lowry, DeRozan, Powell, Carroll, and Valanciunas. And here's my reasoning.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think against, you know, Carroll's looked slow. Last night, Casey said he's not 100% in terms of his conditioning and his timing. I think if you put Carroll at the four, that's sort of limited a little bit. It's sort of alleviated because, you know, he's going up against Lavoy Allen and Solomon Hill instead of Paul George. It's a way, way less, you know, burdensome defensive assignment. And then if you have him at the four, like, they're not going to be able to, you know, they're not going to be able to punish him there. And then plus you have Powell in there. You have three guys really that you can use to guard George in spots, and Powell can be your primary guy. But even DeRozan and Carroll could take possessions on him as well if Powell needs a breather. And then I think you keep intact, as long as Ross is healthy, assuming that's the case. Haven't really heard anything today. But as long as Ross is available, then that keeps intact that Lowry and the bench mob lineup, and just sort of keeps everything smoother, and it totally cuts out Scola's minutes, or it makes it very minimal how many minutes he does play. Maybe he gets into the second quarter in some second units or something, but I think that pretty much cuts him out. What do you think about that, Mitch?
Yeah, I really like the sounds of that. I just hope that Norm didn't get the extended run only because of the Terrence Ross injury, because I kind of have a sneaking suspicion that's why Dwayne just kind of rolled with him, because he had no options. And, I mean, Ross hit those two big threes, but before that he was floating and had some bricks too. And game one was pretty rough for him. So I hope that it's not a Ross or Powell thing. I hope it's both of them. And Scola really doesn't have a place in this series with the lineups Indiana trots out. So,
yeah, and, like, shout out to Scola. He actually, you know, he's been the least of the Raptors' problems, I think, through the first couple games. You know, it's not really a matchup that can exploit him. It's not like, you know, Solomon Hill can shoot, I guess. He can sort of stretch it out, but he's not like a dangerous threat from outside. He's not the types of stretch fours that have really given the Raptors issues before. And neither is Lavoy Allen, obviously. And, you know, Scola's had some, you know, gritty rebounds that could have gone either way. He's really, his YMCA game's been on point. And, you know, shout out to Scola for doing that. I just think, yeah, you're right. I think you want to sort of tighten up the rotation. You know, people were still thinking like, hey, 10 people, that's too many in the playoffs, which it probably is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Scola is the easy guy to cut from that. We did a poll yesterday on the site about, you know, what player the Raptors wanted to see cut from the rotation, and it was like 61% Luis Scola, unsurprisingly. But oddly enough, like, Frank Vogel's had some issues in this series as well with his rotations. Like, he's had some stretches where he's had all three of Ellis, Paul George, and George Hill off the floor at once, which is insane to me, given the, like, far and away that his three most talented players and his three most talented offensive creators. Kevin, like, that's dumb, right?
Absolutely. I think that the thing is, the Pacers really aren't that deep, you know. I think, I mean, again, Stuckey, Lawson, and Hill, Nellis, those are all like tiny guards, but that's really their only options out there.
Yeah, like, the thing that, you know, sort of eased my mind after the first game of the series was, like, the supporting cast. You know, Paul George, it's like, it's cliche, but he's going to get his. Like, he's that good. Absolutely. He's going to get his points. And again, the points he got were, you know, off of tough shots that you'll live with for the most part. I thought the way they defended him, for a little side note, I thought the way they defended him in the first half of game one was really nice. Paul George tried to cut middle a lot, and every time he did that, you'd have either Jonas Valanciunas or Bismack Biyombo meeting him at the free throw line as the help defender up really high, and it forced George to either dump it off to one of the bigs and force them to sort of do something with it, or it forced George to throw up a really tough look. And he went 2 of 9 in that first half, and that really worked. And I don't think it was, you know, that the Raptors stopped doing something that let George go crazy. I just think he started hitting shots from the mid-range from three, that, like, a lot of them were contested. Some of them weren't, but a lot of them are shots that they'll live with. But back to what I was going at, just with the supporting cast for Indiana, like, I was totally, like, put at ease by the fact that they shot 52% from three. Monte Ellis went 3 of 4 from three, which he just doesn't do. And I kind of thought, as soon as this whole collection of secondary guys on this team falls back down to earth, you know, the offense just doesn't have enough to keep going. Mitch, is that, Were you sort of comforted by that as well?
You mean Ty Lawson doesn't move the needle for you? Is that what you're saying?
yeah, I agree with you. I think that, like, they don't really have that go-to guy for scoring off the bench. And, I mean, game two, looking like Solomon Hill played 26 minutes off the bench, but he only got 2 points. And, I mean, if that's the guy they're going to play the most off the pine, then I'm not so worried about the bench outscoring our bench at all or coming even close to their output.
Yeah, I mean, Miles Turner has been the second best player for Indiana in this series, and I don't think it's particularly close. He's been awesome, but he's a rookie. Like,
he's my age. Mean,
yeah.
Shock part.
Yeah, the thing with him is, like, it's weird that the Raptors, too, are kind of relying on a rookie as well. Like, this is especially a second-round rookie, which is, you know, even more bizarre than the 11th overall pick being super, super important for his team in a series. Let's just sort of switch gears and talk about Corey Joseph and Patrick Patterson for a second, because I think they've probably been the two most effective players in this series. Kyle Lowry was really good in game two, but his shooting is still sort of off. But Patterson and Joseph, I think Joseph is shooting something crazy, like, what is he, near like 80% so far in the series? Yeah, he's been unbelievable.
I think he's at like 78, last time I checked, 79 maybe?
Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah, he's been one of the only guys. He's been the only guy who hasn't really been bothered by Indiana's rim protection because of his weird, like, little scoops and stuff, and his, like, crafty moves around the basket. He's just been able to finish every time he's gotten in there. And I don't know. He's been, like, game one, he was pretty much the reason they stayed afloat with Lowry and DeRozan struggling so badly. Joseph came in and just sort of took over. Kevin, what have you seen from Patterson and Joseph so far in this series?
I'll start with Joseph. I think that, like you said, he's making shots at a ridiculous rate right now. And I think some of that has to be traced back to, you know, those years he spent with the San Antonio Spurs and just having that experience, you know, having that poise coming in, no nerves or anything. He's darting in the lane. He's putting up those float shots. He's actually hitting a couple more outside shots than I would have guessed. And that's part of the reason why I think this can't possibly last, just because I'm not as confident in his outside, not this confident in his outside shot to sustain. But again, he's been really, really good, and I think that counts for something. And Patterson too, of course. Patterson, you know, I think he's a guy that he's absolutely worthy of being a starter. You know, even if he's not hitting his outside shots, which he has been, he's somebody that just opens the floor up for you. And he's got that. He's switching on defense. He's playing defense really well, hitting the offensive glass even. And, you know, he's really doing it all for the Raptors. I think he's a major compliment for what they do.
Yeah, and he's had some, like, nice chase-down blocks and contests as well. And that's, like, I mean, game one, Indiana had 25 points off turnovers. The Raptors had 20 turnovers. It could have been a lot more. But Patterson and Valanciunas and Biombo were really good at getting back and just sort of contesting. There were a few just missed bunnies by the Pacers that could have really added to that total. And that's where the Pacers kill you, right, is when they get out and can run and get out and get you out of position. Mitch, for you, like, what's it like to be, like, it's so weird having this confidence in a couple of bench guys to be able to, like, every time Patterson comes in, it's like, okay, they're going to go on like a 6-2 run right now and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the reason they don't want to start him, is because they don't want to lose the synergy they have in that combo when they're on the floor together coming off the bench. But Patterson's been so great. And, I mean, you're so comfortable with him guarding nearly like four positions, because he can guard threes to fives well. And even if he gets switched onto a point, you're not terrified for a blow-by. You think he's going to be able to stay with them. And, of course, Corey's bailed them out on so many possessions when DeMar's just kind of shoveled them the ball late with five on the clock. He'll just get a screen and finish at the rim with three guys on him. So, I mean, when you have that on your bench, a guy that can bail out a possession, that definitely makes you more comfortable watching.
Yeah, I think I'm okay if they keep him on the bench to start games. As much as it'd be nice to just see them be really good from the start of games and not have these weird stretches where they're sort of still fighting it with Scola on the floor, especially if they go with my idea to start Carroll at the four,
yeah.
Then I think, like, you're totally fine. But if you're going to be playing Patterson 32 minutes a night anyway and giving him closing minutes, I don't think it really matters if you're starting him, because it's not like Indiana is this sort of, like, killer offensive team that can blow you away in the first 5 minutes of a game. And yesterday, Patterson did come in pretty – it was, like, less than 5 minutes before Patterson got subbed in for Scola. So, Casey, I think, is shortening the leash on Scola a little bit and just giving Patterson some more room to run, because, like, it's undeniable at this point. He's been fantastic. And we'll get more into Patterson in the next segment as well, and Joseph. in just a little bit. Lastly, before we take a little break, let's talk about Jonas Valanciunas. He has been a terror for Indiana so far. Paul George yesterday in the press conference was very complimentary of Jonas, saying, you know, the Raptors, you know, Lowry, they've shut down Lowry and DeRozan. They've done a really good job against them, but Jonas is just giving them so many problems. He had 23 and 15 last night, 19 and 10 at the half. Let's start with you, Kevin. Is it a matter of the way Indiana's play defense? Because it feels like they're sort of, you know, very, very mindful of Lowry and DeRozan's ability to drive and are sort of sagging off of Jonas and bringing their big men up higher, and it's really not paying off for them. Is Jonas's, you know, production right now a product of, you know, the way the Pacers are playing him, or is he just taking a whole new level with his game?
It's a little bit of that, absolutely, because the way we're seeing Lowry play, even though he's not making his shots, you know, he's probing the lane and he's being very patient with it, and that leaves Valanciunas open for, you know, a lob or a dump pass. But at the same time, Valanciunas has been amazing. He's been the earth shaker. He's been I'm not sure if the Pacers exactly have the personnel to stop him. You know, Mahinmi's played, what, like 15, 20 minutes a game right now? And I think he's their best option. But even then, Mahinmi one-on-one, he'll put up a pretty good fight. But I'm not sure he's the guy that can stop Valanciunas on his own. And, you know, when he turns to Miles Turner or whoever else on the bench, when Frank Vogel does that, then Valanciunas is just going to eat, especially when they go four out, which actually I think is a little bit interesting. I'm just going to touch on this real quick. You know, because the Pacers, obviously not a very good offensive team. Their dilemma is to either stay with two traditional bigs, Mahinmi and Allen or whoever, or go four out with, you know, somebody like Solomon Hill or CJ Miles at the four to goose the offense. And I think if I'm Frank Vogel, personally, I think that's something where I'll let Valanciunas kill us and I'll stay four out just because we need that kind of boost in our offense. But that means you're going to have to live with Valanciunas killing you. And as we're seeing, it's a very difficult dilemma for the Pacers.
For sure. And if the Raptors are going to be dictating the pace like they have so far, like Indiana's offense, as it is with the two bigs, just doesn't have nearly enough juice to sustain over a full game. And just it's just a math problem for them at that point. Mitch, I want to get back to Jonas for a second with you. And I totally forgot the train of thought I was going to go on. Oh, I just wanted to ask you, like, it's sort of nice because the improvements he's shown, it's not like he's just getting the ball in the post over and over again, right?
It's been off the pick and roll, because I mean, he's still in the post, even though he's getting to the bucket and he's got some buckets out of post ups, he's still indecisive, and you see him go with the pump fake and that, but being able to roll hard has been something he hasn't done consistently, and to be able to finish around the rim, catching it in the air, is really nice to see. And of course, with the matchups he's against, I was reading Candace Buckner's insider report today, and she said Mahinmi tweaked his back. So I mean, if he's out for any length of time, then the Pacers are really in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, last year in the playoffs, you know, Valanciunas was really, really shut down by Marcin Gortat and just his ability to wall off the paint when he tried for those little swooping post-ups. And you know, this year Valanciunas is still trying them time to time, and it's working sometimes, it's not working others. Mahimi's actually done a pretty good job of doing what Gortat did last year. But the difference with Valanciunas now is, like, you saw it last night, there was one play where he got the ball, he had okay position, made a couple dribbles, realized he didn't have it, kicked out, and then reposted, and then scored right away.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, that's something he never used to do. He's also, you know, it's sort of like flailing and awkward when he does it, but he's passing out of the post up a lot more as well. Like, there were a couple last night, you know, it's very awkward to see, but it's effective as hell when he does it. And it's really nice to see him actually doing that. And most of his points, yeah, are coming in the pick and roll, or are just off these, you know, putbacks that, you know, these 14 attempts at a putback every time he...
Yeah, he draws so many loose ball fouls, flailing the arms, it almost works to his advantage.
Yeah, for sure. He's been awesome. And I think the only way for Indiana to really shut him down and to really pay him the proper attention is to sort of sag off and, you know, kind of give Lowry and DeRozan a little bit more room to drive to the basket and stop meeting them so high. Because if you're going to be doing that, Valanciunas is going to have space to operate, and he's going to have space for them to throw these lobs to him. So it's sort of a one or the other, and Valanciunas might actually be the key to sort of opening things up for the other guys who are struggling right now. That seems like it'll do it for our first segment. On the other side, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about some, some future stuff, I suppose. DeMar DeRozan's series here, whether or not it's causing any questions about his future with the Raptors or what he might do. I think Stephen A. Smith said some stuff, so we always have to pay him attention. Kyle Lowry versus Corey Joseph is apparently a thing, so we'll get to that. And we'll also talk about Patrick Patterson and Corey Joseph not getting any love for Sixth Man of the Year. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. Okay, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Mitch Robson and Kevin Young. Gonna dive into some, you know, future looking because, you know, we're Raptors fans. We have to look to the future and what it means instead of enjoying what's happening at the moment. So, first off, let's just get this out of the way. I think it was Cathal Kelly. I think there were a couple other radio hosts or whatever who said this, that Corey Joseph could easily replace Kyle Lowry if the Raptors lose this series and the Raptors want to shake things up, they could easily just jettison Kyle Lowry and Corey Joseph could step in and do what he does. That is not true. Corey Joseph is awesome. He is not Kyle Lowry. He's not the cerebral player that Kyle Lowry is. He's not the shooter that Kyle Lowry is. He's a very good defender, but he's not the creator that Kyle Lowry is. Everything he does is just like one step down or a couple steps down from what Lowry does. Lowry was one of the top 10 players in the NBA this season. Like, he's probably 7th or 8th in terms of the MVP conversation. And it's just crazy talk. Yes, it would be sort of damning for Lowry if the Raptors were to lose again with him as the best player on the team in the playoffs. But at the same time, you look back at the Brooklyn series, the Raptors weren't really expected to win that series. Getting to Game 7 was sort of a surprise and a nice thing, and they were one possession away from winning that game in Game 7. So I don't think, like, that series was not on Kyle Lowry. He was fine, and this was before he was even, you know, at the superstar status he's at now. Last season, he was broken down. Maybe this is making excuses, but you could tell he was broken down from carrying the team in the first part of the year. He just didn't have anything left, understandably, I would say. And, like, of course, you know, it sucked that the Raptors got swept, but, you know, I don't think Lowry could have done anything more than he did. And then this season, this was one game that the Raptors lost and people were going crazy and it was mass hysteria. I hope yesterday's game sort of calmed everything down. But Mitch, let's go to you. Like, this is dumb, right?
It's completely dumb. Like, are we forgetting that performance in January when he took over the game against the Cavs? So we won the season series, dropped 43 points, outplayed LeBron. It was like the biggest night in Toronto Raptors regular season history the past 5 years. Like, it's just, it's maddening because I think it also, though, the calm has in part to do with how the Raptors have marketed them with DeRozan and Lowry. Like, DeRozan, they've made the poster boy, which they did prematurely, I think, because he's the one that gets introduced last. He's the one that's the focal point of all the commercials, but he's not the better player, so...
No, he's just not. Like, DeMar's great. I love DeMar. And, you know, I think there are better days ahead for him in the playoffs. But he's not the defender Lowry is. Lowry's been so effective. He has these moments. Like, last night you could sort of tell it was coming. The shot didn't come, really. But you could tell. You just sort of feel. I think I tweeted it out before the start of the fourth quarter. That you could just sort of feel that Kyle Lowry FU mode was coming. And it was about to take form. And in a way, it did. He didn't score a ton of points in the fourth quarter, but he totally led that charge and that crazy run to start the fourth quarter with the bench unit. Kevin, you are in agreement, right?
Yeah. You know, I don't have much to say about it. It's really just a hot take.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. That said, I guess the interesting thing is to look forward to this next summer, which is getting really ahead of ourselves. And sort of looking at Lowry's contract and whether or not he's going to be worth a max deal at 31 or 32. But, I mean, that's a conversation for another day. Another thing to hammer out quickly before we get to the actual topic I'm interested in here. DeMar, like, his series has been bad. There's no denying it. Like, we've talked about, I think there are reasons for that. I think Paul George has done a fantastic job and is maybe the worst matchup for him in the league, non-Kawhi Leonard division. And I think there are better days ahead, but Is there any, Mitch, we'll start with you. Is there any, you know, inkling that a really poor performance in the playoffs here, even if the Raptors, you know, win a series here, but DeMar sort of plays second fiddle and is sitting on the bench in a lot of fourth quarters, do you think that it'll affect the decision-making going forward? Would you, I mean, as a fan, would you be less inclined to want to see the Raptors bring him back on a max deal?
I'm gonna hate myself for this because I don't think they should let him walk because he's been such a big part of this team's rebuilding and he's been here since they drafted him, never asked out, never said anything publicly to go against the organization. But that being said, if the Lakers want to throw max money at him, I don't know if you can match it.
Really? I just think you have to do it as an asset management thing. Like,
I mean,
he'd be tradable. Like, I think if you were to offer them that money, he would still come. Like Stephen A. Smith, I guess, said yesterday, oh, DeMar sitting on the bench just waiting out his last few days as a Raptor before he goes to L.A. I mean,
it's really hot takey of me to just, like, judge it off this playoff performance, but if he shoots like this for the next 2-3 games, I don't know. I'm going to be very torn.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big believer in guys, like, disappearing in the playoffs, but I think pressure is a thing that definitely exists, and maybe it gets to guys more than others. But like, I think that, you know, DeMar's going to be fine. I think, like, I think you give him the money. I think you get past this series and you see him in a series against either Charlotte or Miami and things get a lot different. Maybe Justice Winslow gives him some trouble, but I think, you know, DeMar has the size. Winslow's a lot more like a Butler than a Paul George in terms of his physical dimensions, I think. And I think that's really the big difference with Paul George. And you know, I think you go forward. I think you gotta give him the money. I think it's just a smart asset management thing to do. And if you feel like you got to trade him at some point, you feel like it's not working out, then you can do that because that'll be a tradable contract at some point in the next couple of years. Kevin, where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I think that it absolutely is an asset management thing. You're not going to do enough with that cap space to justify letting DeMar go. Mm-hmm. At the same time, this series really has – it has thrown in doubt a little bit what DeMar can offer when he's not making his shots, just because, you know, in the playoffs, you are going to encounter those great, great, great perimeter defenders where you're going to face more double teams, more aggressive scheming. So I think, you know, you're facing these questions where if DeMar's not scoring, what else does he offer you? And is that worth, you know, that dilemma worth a max contract? And I think it's a very, very question to ask. But at the same time, he's somebody that it'd be too demoralizing now for the Raptors to let him go. Partly, you know, just given how long it took them to get to this point of being, you know, a great, great team in the NBA. And also just because they built something that seems like it's lasting here with Lowry and DeRozan together. I think it's too difficult to break that up right now. And you just don't do it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I just think it's tough to, it's so weird because we, especially like in the numbers side of things, it's like, hey, you got to like look at large samples and don't get worried about small samples. And like the playoffs are the ultimate small sample,
yeah.
But they're also like the most pivotal small sample. And I feel like, you know, a couple of really bad series can really tarnish a guy's reputation. Even if a guy like DeMar, who has been amazing so far, like this season up until the playoffs, I think that can really throw out of whack how people see him. Let's get to more positive things here, or negative, I guess. I mean, I don't care. Sixth Man of the Year is a dumbass award, okay? It sucks. It is awarding a guy who is too flawed to be a starter. Like, it is. That's what the award is. It's a dumb concept for an award. I don't understand it. But it's a thing anyway. Jamal Crawford won it for the third time because guys who win this award are shooters. That is what happens. They score points, they shoot low percentages, they don't play defense, and they get rewarded. Lou Williams won it last year. Crawford won it by a pretty big margin as well over Andre Iguodala. Ennis Kanter came third, Will Barton fourth, Evan Turner fifth, Ryan Anderson sixth. Then you got Jeremy Lin, Ed Davis, Dennis Schroeder, Tristan Thompson, Sean Livingston, J.J. Barea, Boris Diaw, Zach LaVine, Darren Collison, Alan Crabb, Drew Holiday, and all the way down, the second last in terms of voting. Patrick Patterson had one third place vote. Mirza Cheletovic came next after him. And Corey Joseph had no votes whatsoever, which is weird because I think people were sort of pumping up Joseph as the better candidate than Patterson. And like, here's my thing. I don't care about this award. Like, it doesn't matter to me. and you want to give it to Gunners, fine. I think that's flawed because, you know, guys like, I think Iguodala is probably the guy who should have won it because he brings so much on the defensive end as well and is so key to what the Warriors want to do. And he's part of the death lineup, which is, you know, that's a thing. And I think he should have won it. I don't think guys who don't contribute on one entire end of the floor really deserve that award. And I think it's still sort of, it's weird that, you know, we can look at a guy like Kawhi Leonard who doesn't have these crazy counting stats, but is, you know, probably second in MVP voting. But you look at the sixth man and it's just like, all right, he's most points. We give it to him. That's just that it. So that sort of bugs me about it. And I think Patterson and Joseph being part of one of the best benches in the NBA and being part of one of the best overall lineups in the NBA in the Lowry and the bench mob, like, I think those guys deserved a little bit more love than, say, you know, a Jeremy, maybe not a Jeremy Lin. Jeremy Lin, this is a deep, it's a deep category, okay? But I think, you know, I think they deserve a little bit more recognition than a lot of people got. And I think Patrick Patterson, did his third place vote come from Zach Lowe? That's what my guess would be. But Kevin, I guess, what do you think about Patterson and Joseph getting one third place boat between the two? I can't speak right now.
it's crappy, you know. I think Patterson did have that rough stretch to start the season, but even then, his off court numbers, his plus minus numbers, whatever, they were all, you know, outrageously in his favor. And, you know, Corey Joseph too, he was a part of that Lowry plus bench lineup that was amazing, and they were absolutely way more, they had a greater impact than types like Crawford or Kennard. Because here's the thing, you're right, the sixth man award is a really, really stupid award. I think on merit, Tristan Thompson had the best argument, but you have this weird construction where, because, oh, Thompson started 30 games or whatever, now you're wondering about whether it's true to the letter or whatever of the award. Mm-hmm. But it's a moot point because the voters, they all just go down the points per game leaderboard. Oh, Jamal Crawford, 15 points, 40% field goal shooting, I'm going to take him. Enes Kanter, however many points he had, 10, 15, whatever. Terrible defense, second place vote on my ballot. So it really is just a terrible award.
Yeah, Mitch, what do you think?
Yeah, completely. Like, it's sort of like most improved, where the criteria is so foggy, you really don't know what you would have to do to impress a voting committee. I mean, I don't think either of them will really get upset. They'll take a series win in the playoffs over that 100%. Because, I mean, you had a guy on the team win the award last year and had that work out, so...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, and I think, yeah, I think, I can't remember who tweeted this today, but I totally agreed. I think a big part of, like, why people would have given Crawford the nod is because he had a lot of fourth quarter moments and some big, you know, game-winning shots and things like that that stand out. You know, Lou Williams had a similar thing last year where he had all these, I mean...
Lou go ISOs to end quarters every game.
Yeah, and I mean, those he converted those at like a 22% rate or something ridiculous like that, but at the same time, he did hit a few that were big, and I think those stand out in people's minds, and the 78% of the time where it didn't work didn't get noticed at all. So, I prefer most improved to this award too. Most improved is dumb as well, but I think that's even more, you know, valuable of an award than giving out the sixth man, but whatever, preaching to the choir, I suppose here. You guys want to get to the couple questions we have?
Sure. Absolutely.
Alrighty, I'll pull these up here because I lost my page. First question comes from I like too many tweets. Okay, so Chris Walder, sort of similar to what we said earlier. Do you think Jonas's play is a merely result of Indiana's weak front court, or is something finally clicking? Mitch, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about, I think it's a blend of both, him being more confident, and I think also, like, one thing we didn't touch on when we talked about him is he worked on his conditioning this year, right? To start the year, he was running a lot, so I think being able to stay in the game without lagging up the floor for stretches of more than 4 or 5 minutes has really helped him, especially in that pick and roll game, being able to take it strong every touch.
Kevin?
Yeah, this is one of the things that I didn't really touch on earlier. My answer is that I think that Valanciunas really has made that improvement himself. And like Mitch said, it is a bit of both. But as far as Valanciunas' play goes, I think that all those things that you maybe doubted him for in years 2 and 3 or whatnot, he's really improved as a help defender, as a rim protector, as a not really a passer yet, but it's something that, you know, I feel better about these days as far as being optimistic goes. And that really, like, opens up the game for him to be what he is inside, a dominant inside scorer. So I think it really is it's credit to Valanciunas.
Yeah, he's made a lot of strides. It's funny, you know, Casey was very complimentary of Valanciunas yesterday and said he was really proud of how far he's come and said that he is the strongest hands on the entire team in terms of catching the ball, which, you know, he's proven. Like, as a roller, he's such a big target and such a reliable one. He's like Bismack Biyombo if they put Stickum on his hands. Like, he's been awesome in that regard. And yeah, defensively, I think you make a good point, Kevin. He's come a long way. I think the scheme change has really helped him. And yeah, it's very encouraging. I think going forward, that $16 million a year contract is going to look fine. And it's all coming together, but yeah, he's definitely taking advantage of some kind of weak competition in this series. We'll see what happens going forward. I think in a second round series against maybe like a Charlotte, if, you know, Cody Zeller or Frank Kaminsky get going from, you know, mid range, that could give Jonas some trouble. But, for now, very, very happy with what I'm seeing. This one comes from Mitch Robson. I want to know which patio Kevin because Kevin was pre-drinking for the podcast because he didn't want
which
to.
I really should have done now that I know this.
Kevin just couldn't handle the idea of talking to us for 50 minutes. He had to load up on the beers. Where'd you go, Kevin?
Went to Tortilla Flats. It's on Queen and just past Medina. It's a nice place, actually.
Okay, you didn't go to Tall Boys?
No, but I'll go there next Wednesday.
Damn right, bro. What's that?
There you go.
Okay, I thought you said something.
No.
Okay. Next question comes from John Godis. Who wins a title first, the Colts or the Pacers? Mitch, you go.
Well, I don't even know. I don't follow. I used to be such a big fan. This is kind of a diatribe, but I used to be such a big fan of following NFL roster moves. And then, like, I just kind of stopped after, like, the past 3 years. And I just, once September starts, I'll figure out who's on every team. So I'll just go with the Colts because I think Andrew Luck is a good quarterback. So there you go.
Okay, Kevin?
I don't know, man. I guess, you know, if I've learned anything from the Raptors' terrible game ops, videos, it's going to be the Indiana Fever.
Corn. LOL. They live in the country.
Man, Kevin, you've been there, so you've seen it. Absolutely. The game ops in game one was absolutely, like, appallingly bad. They had, like, two, like, Indiana slander skits that were just, like, not even close to being funny. It was, like, the top 10 things about Indiana. Number one was, it's only a 6-hour drive from the greatest city in North America. It's like, what the hell is this crap that people are... Like, the second game was a little better. They had, like, a halftime show where two buff dudes lifted each other. That was cool, I guess.
And I think what they did in the game one, too, was, like, the one time the Raps went on a run, they zapped the crowd energy with some stupid contest as soon as it went to a timeout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm all for baby races and dog races being the only sort of contest they do because that gets people riled up.
Absolutely. I think every single game break little event or contest they have should involve dogs or babies.
Also, I love Herbie Kuhn. He's been, you know, one of the voices of my childhood and my Raptors fandom. Yeah. But why does he have to chant "Let's go Raptors" into the mic at full volume while the entire arena is doing it at a crazy loud level?
Doesn't
I don't want get to it
feel left out. Come on.
It's like Herbie. They know what to do. They're already doing it. Okay, final question comes from at Tony @Tony_007. Is it possible to win this series without DeMar's offense? How realistic is it? I'll take this one first. I think it's totally possible to win this series. I think you saw last night that even when DeMar's not going, and even when he's in for stretches, then he's not effective. The Raptors' defense is good enough, and Indiana's offense is bad enough that I think the Raptors can survive. I just think it mostly comes down to Indiana not being able to live without secondary offense, because after Paul George, it's a real drop-off, and you saw it last night when they're not hitting their shots. I think in that third quarter, Josh Lewenberg tweeted this out. I think they were... like George was like, you know, 5 for 7 or something, and the rest of the team was 1 for 8. So I think the Raptors can definitely survive. But Mitch, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. Just one point would be, like, in these next two road games, even if he can just get himself going for like a third or fourth quarter, if the game's tight, just to kind of give them a boost down the stretch, that would be nice to see.
Oh, for sure.
Just
it'd
to
be really nice.
Kind of be a closer at least for a couple minutes and knock down three or four mid-range jumpers in a row.
And maybe that comes against, you know, a Rodney Stuckey or something like that.
Yeah.
And it almost seemed like he was going to get into a flow in the start of the third yesterday when he came in. He hit two shots out of the break, but then it all fell apart again. Kevin, what do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that the way we've seen, you know, Valanciunas play, Patterson play, Kyle Lowry, even when he's not making shots, passing the ball in the pick and roll and whatnot, I think it's very encouraging stuff. And like you said, Indiana doesn't scare you so much after Paul George. They just really don't have those secondary options. I think DeMar's also going to – he can't be this bad the rest of the series, I imagine. He's a bad shot maker, I guess. So I think it really is an optimistic look forward, I think.
I think the optimism we have, even though DeMar's been so bad, is indicative of how much the Raptors really outclass the Pacers in terms of talent from top to bottom. Just like once you get down in the depths of the roster, it's not even a close contest. You got Ty Lawson and Rodney Stuckey out there, while Patterson and Joseph and Biombo are just torching teams. So I think the Raptors should be fine. I think last night's win will definitely sort of calm some nervous tension. So we'll look forward to game three on Thursday. I think that's it, boys. Yeah, no more questions. We will wrap this section up here. We'll come back on the other side with a very, very a guy who I remember pretty fondly as a Raptor with our episode sponsor. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Mitch Robson and Kevin Young, wrapping things up here with your episode sponsor. This episode of the headquarters is brought to you by Rasho Nesterovic. I think you say he was a fan favorite for the time he was here. No,
I would say so. Yeah,
yeah. He was a he had two different stints with the Raptors. I kind of forget about that. He played the two playoff years, 06-07 and 07-08. I guess he was the backup center or was he the starter?
He was the starter. Yeah.
Yeah, he started 51 games out of 80 in 05-06 and 73 games in 06-07. So pretty effective. He also played 42 games in 2009-10 with the Raptors after things had gone downhill with the team. So that was the final year of Chris Bosh's tenure, and the Raptors missed the playoffs. Good times all around. So 06-07, he had 6.2 points, 4.5 boards. But he really came on in 07-08. He had 7.8 points, 4.8 boards. He shot 55% from the field. He was a good player. Solid center for the Raptors. Anyone have like a particular memory of Rasho? Mitch, you go ahead.
Oh God. no specific moment. I'm really blanking right now, but
it's not like he had any like sick dunks.
I was gonna say just like tight. He set some good hard screens to knock a guy over, maybe like
just a few great offensive rebounds.
Yeah,
he was like Jonas with the one-handers before Jonas.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Kevin, anything that you remember of Rasho?
I got nothing. 07-08 was like my first year getting into the NBA, and I was probably like 12 or 13 or something back then. I got nothing,
oh
man.
Yeah, I think that's how old we probably were.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Sean's an
old. I'm so old. I'm not even old. Oh my God. Okay. So let's go to this. You guys want to play a game of that random Raptors game?
Let's do it. Gonna get 5 out of 15.
Yeah. So. So yeah, Kevin's never played this game before, obviously, because it's his first time on the show. Mitch played once before. This one, we're going to go with, it's a playoff edition. And actually, we're recording this on the night of April 19th, but this will probably be heard by most people on April 20th, which is the 8-year anniversary of Game 1 against the Orlando Magic in 2008. A series the Raptors lost in 5 games. It was a very disappointing series, but Rasho Nesterovic had a really nice game in the first game of that series. So we're going to play that random Raptors game. for game one against the Orlando Magic in 2008. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
All right. It's a very commemorative time right here. Okay, so the Raptors lost this game to the Magic, 114-100 in Orlando. This was such a depressing series.
It was a 1-8 matchup, wasn't it?
I think it was like a 3-6.
Oh, really? It was that?
Yeah. I think the Raptors were 6, but I can't really remember. The Raptors were... This was a very sad series. I just remember being depressed the entire time. So, Rajan Ostarević in Game 1 had 16 points, 8 rebounds. He was 8 of 15 from the field. He was the second best starter with just a minus 6, which, sure, I guess that's cool. 11 Raptors suited up in this game. So we're going to try to go through. Rasho is obviously one of them. Mitch, I will. We'll just go back and forth one for one and see if you guys can just go. So Mitch, we'll start with you.
All right. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Chris Bosh.
That would be correct. Kevin?
This is going to go terribly. Sonny Weems?
Sonny Weems was not there. No. You're trying to push Sonny Weems as our episode sponsor.
Kevin absolutely adores Sonny Weems.
All right, so Mitch, you're at one right now. Kevin at none. Mitch, you go.
Anthony Parker.
Correct. He led the team in scoring in this game. Actually, he had a great game. He was 24 points, 7 of 14 from the field, 3 of 6 from downtown.
Parkerville.
7 rebounds, 4 assists. He was a monster in this game. Also led the team in minutes as well. Okay, so we got 3. Kevin, what do you got?
Was it Alonzo Mourning?
What?
Dude, he never played. He refused to come.
He never once played.
Yeah, they traded him here, and he was like, nah.
This goes to show how much I know about Raptors history.
You child.
That's cool.
This is funnier the more... It's like 4 years after the trade.
That's what I'm saying, man. This is going to go terribly.
Okay, Mitch, you're leading 2-0. Go ahead.
Jose Calderon.
Yeah, he came off the bench, scored 9 points. 3 of 11 from the field. He lit it up. Okay. Kevin?
Bargnani. Bargnani's got to be there.
Yes, Bargnani's there.
Thank God. I like that Alonzo Mourning was ahead of Bargnani on the guest play scale.
So yeah, Bargnani in this game, he had 5 points on 2 of 8 shooting, minus 15. Of course, he had 3 rebounds because he couldn't rebound worth shit as a 7-footer. Good stuff, Andrea. That's 4 of the 5 starters, so we're getting there. It's 3-1 right now for Mitch. Go ahead again.
TJ Ford?
TJ Ford is correct. It's the final starter. He had 5 points. He was 1 of 9 from the field, 6 assists.
Jesus, that's awful.
He had a bad game. Yeah, he was really bad. He was only a minus 5 somehow. He only played 22 minutes, but yeah, he was bad in this game. So he was our sponsor last week as well, so good call. The starting lineup is squared off. There are 5 guys remaining on the bench. Kevin, I guess we'll ask you again.
The only reason I might get this one is because you mentioned him as a previous sponsor, but Luke Jackson?
No. Luke Jackson was the year before. Luke Jackson was the year before against the Nets, where he played 11 minutes over 3 games. So it's 4-1 for Mitch right now. Mitch, go ahead again.
Jamario Moon?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Played,
my boy. He played, my boy. Yeah.
He played 448 in this game. No points. 0 for 1 from the field. 1 rebound. Minus 9. Minus 9 in 4.5 minutes.
That's great. That's a great line.
Okay, I guess we will go over to you, Kevin, if you...
Like, former three-point champ, Kevin, I think.
Oh, Jason Capono. Thank you.
Yes.
There we go. I'm dishing assists like Kyle Lowry now.
Yeah, it's 5-2 now. You guys are missing 3 more guys from the bench.
Joey Graham?
Yes, Joey Graham played 112 in this game.
Okay, there's got to be a big in there, too.
This is the saddest game ever. I forgot how much this game makes me sad. All right, there's 2 guys left, a big man and a wing.
Big man and a wing.
Both were awful.
A wing?
Was it Mo Pete?
No, Mo Pete was long gone at this point.
He was on the Hornets, I think, then, yeah.
Yeah.
Did Maceo Bastin play?
Maceo Bastin did not play. That's like the pick that everyone always resorts to when there's like one guy left bastard. That no one's gotten. That and Pop So.
Oh, I love Pop So. Oh, Spencer Ponsu?
No. He was a regular season 10 day guy, was he not?
I thought he was like on a contract 1 year.
Yeah, yeah. I remember Spencer Ponsu was a part of my childhood, man.
Yeah, I love Pop.
As was Alonzo Mourning, apparently.
Okay. Big. Was it Chris Humphreys?
Oh, yes.
Big one. Ah, damn, Mr. Kardashian.
This is me clapping. Chris Humphreys played 14 seconds in this game.
Wow.
Okay, there's one guy left. It's 5-3 right now.
It's yeah, 5-3. Wing.
Yeah, it's a wing.
Why am I blanking on this?
This is the Colangelo era, so you know where he was from. A different country.
Oh, Garbo?
No. Oh. His knee was just shattered at this point.
Right. Yeah, okay. A North American wing. I have no clue.
Former Piston as well. Very handsome.
What?
Very handsome.
I feel like I should be cluing in, but I'm really not.
Okay, I'll pull him up. He had some nice games, I think, at some point. How many years did he play with the Raptors? He played just 1 year with the Raptors. He also played for Milwaukee. Left the league in 2012-13 after playing a bit with Houston.
Oh, Carlos Delfino.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, oh man. God, that was... All right, you guys got it. Or Mitch got it. Right. Kevin sort of helped.
That's right.
Oh, man. Okay. So, yeah, that's that. That was a really depressing round. Yeah. A nice anniversary edition from that playoff defeat at the hands of the Orlando Magic. I think that's all we got for the day, though, boys. Thanks for coming on and joining me today to talk about Games 1 and 2. Just a couple of things. You can find the headquarters on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, review, do all that. It's very much appreciated, any and all feedback. You can find me on Twitter at Woodley Sean. Mitch is at underscore Mitch Robson.
Yeah, because at Mitch Robson is taken by some clown with an egg emoji. Or Abby.
Just DM him.
Yeah, I should
have been his DMs.
All right.
Kevin, you are at Kevin HFY?
Absolutely, because at Kevin Young is taken by one of the many other Kevin Youngs out there.
Okay. I thought it would just be at Alonzo Mourning. So... as a couple more things, HQ Overtime, as we mentioned off the top, it is our post-game show immediately after every Raptors playoff game, hosted by our boy John Godis. I'm going to be on the episode on Thursday after Game 3, so tune in for that. We'll be tweeting out links just when the game wraps up, and you can listen live and also find the archive shows on iTunes and on RaptorsHQ.com and the original post that we'll put up with the live show link. And Tall Boys, April 27th, 7 o'clock. Again, we mentioned this off the top as well. I will be doing a podcast with Will Liu of The Score / Raptors Republic, Blake Murphy, Raptors Republic, Daniel Reynolds, our managing editor here at Raptors HQ. We'll be doing a live podcast at Tall Boys as part of the Hoop Talks Hangout series. It's a free event. Beer, you can get $5 steam whistles. It'll be a fun time all around. You just have to go on. We'll tweet the link out and we'll put it in with the post here. So you can sign up there and come hang out and say hi and drink some beer, and we'll talk about basketball. Hopefully we'll be talking about a Raptors Game 5 win and series clinching win to move on to the second round, but we'll see. So thank you so much. Guys, thanks for coming on, and thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week or later this week, probably next week, with another episode of the Headquarters.